Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi.
Siri. Welcome to High Theory.
In this podcast, we get high on the substance of theory. I'm Kim Adams.
And I'm Sharunik Boshu.
We are two tired academics trying to save critique from itself.
Friends of High Theory, thank you so much for talking to us and listening to us this past year. Our audience has grown way beyond what we had expected when we started on this journey.
If you like what we do, please consider rating us and writing a review on the platform you use to listen to High Theory. Many thanks in advance.
Hello and welcome to High Theory. Today we are talking about Squid Game with Kyung Kim. Kyung, would you mind introducing yourself?
My name is Kyung Kim, author of a new book, Hegemonic Mimicry, Korean Popular Culture of 21st Century. And I also wrote a Zoom play, The Mass Debate, which is available on YouTube.
What the heck is Squid Game?
Squid Game is Netflix drama that was and still continues to be incredibly popular over the internet worldwide. And it's based on a children's game that used to be played in Korea. And I used to play myself when I was younger also.
Briefly, could you give us like what the original game was about?
Squid Game introduces actually... I don't know, 5-6 different variations of children's games. I think there is a definitive kind of Squid Game that in the if you actually watch the episode, it's the final episode where they play kind of a jump skip kind of a game, escape game, sort of like a rugby variation in Korea. And then it also introduces 5 or 6 different games like Dakji, you know, which is the flipping of the cards. To marbles, green light, red light. All of these are, games that Korean children do play that has been transformed into a very bloody, right? Competitive games that contestants, sort of the disposable people, quote unquote, do end up playing in Korea.
Squid Game is being talked about in the same conversation as Parasite, which also, you know, did amazingly well, and the conversation about class critique in both of these cultural texts. So I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about, you know, what this particular moment in the history of Korean cinema is speaking to.
I think the background of the two contents, one is a feature film, Parasite, and Squid Game is obviously, I just said, a Netflix drama, believe 9 episodes. Incredibly similar in the ways in which it approaches socioeconomic, you know, problems that Korea faces because of, you know, intense competition that rises out of neoliberal capitalism. And so that's the setting. And then, you know, using that as a bleak kind of a backdrop, they unfold a drama, which focuses on, you know, the battle between, like, interestingly enough, not between haves and have-nots, but between two haves, which I think is very pivotal in thinking about the deeper, profound issue of what today's society is like.
So my next question, and however you wanted to interpret it, which is how do we use Squid Game?
I'm beginning to give talks on Squid Game that ranges from, I think, not just in terms of thematics and the content, obviously, of the critique of neoliberal capitalism, but thinking about today's culture that is about social media driven and how the streaming content, no longer the film, right, seems to be the strong, obviously, narratives that drive certain cultural engine worldwide. And what is it about Netflix that operates out of, you know, as you probably in 150 countries? What does a $500 million investment in South Korean film industry right now by Netflix mean? What does it mean that there is a global and local kind of politics being played out? All of those things, I think, you know, are challenges that people want me to address when it comes to understanding of Squid Game.
Within the Korean film industry in Korea, not, you know, Korean movies as is propagated outside Korea, in Korea, outside of Netflix, how are those same conversations about class critique happening?
Korea has always been very driven by class inequalities and critique of neoliberal capitalism in South Korea, right? Obviously, right. North Korea is a whole nother different set of issues. South Korean stories have always been propelled by, there is this kind of frustrating irritation, you know, that has to do with inequalities. How do we address it? And I think Korean cinema especially has been one of the vehicles to introduce some of the stories that arise out of this, social injustice, if you will. Korea's had a very long tradition in this. And it's because Korea's always been perceived as this kind of country of outsiders, you know, a sort of shrimp that is caught between two whales, you know, that you've got China, Japan, Russia, and then, you know, now United States, a heavy player over the last 75 years. And always perceived itself, you know, to be David, you know, that has to go up against Goliath. That's, I think, what drives some of these stories to be, again, you know, a fairly plausible stories about, again, a battle that is happening between haves and have-nots, and, you know, different kinds of issues of social injustice, right?
My final question is, how will Squid Game save the world?
It can't, but, nobody not many people who actually watch this Netflix series will, at the end of the day, you know, finish the episodes and go, okay, I'm gonna pick up a copy of Das Kapital, you know, Karl Marx, and become communist. I don't think, what is likely to happen. More likely to happen is, you know, they'll go to Amazon site and order themselves, you know, different merch that is out there available on Squid Game costumes, right? Savoring in and cashing in on more, you know, capitalism. But I am hoping, I mean, at least it starts a conversation. This is like, 20th interview that I'm doing on Squid Game.
Okay.
And I've done, I mean, this is probably, I don't do very many podcasts, but I do a lot of, mainstream media. And so even in mainstream media, I would say, well, they'll ask me, is this a critique of neoliberal capitalism? And I'll say yes. So there's a recognition just on those very terms that it's not a complete cop-out. It is variation of these kind of survival, you know, game format narratives, dystopian narratives, if you will, you know, of the Hunger Games and whatnot. So you got that going on, but there's definitely, right, a real sense of, okay, this is not right, yeah? So hopefully it does, you know, make us better aware of the inequalities that are out there and, you know, perhaps start a conversation is what I'm thinking that it has the power to do.
Absolutely. So I know that I've asked you questions about Squid Game, but I can't let you go without asking you about your new book, Hegemonic Mimicry. We will, of course, link the book in the show notes. But what can you tell us about hegemonic mimicry, Korean popular culture of the 21st century?
Well, in 100 words or less, I would say that it is a book trying to understand why Korean popular culture out of different national popular cultures that have been out there outside of Anglo-American, right, popular culture, have been probably the most successful over the last 20 years or so. You know, by far the most recognizable and visible popular culture, even though it actually does speak a language that is not English or Spanish or, you know, French, those major languages, right? And it's not just K-pop that is probably the most famous among the Korean popular culture, but as you can see, there is, at least a handful of Korean films that have become exceptionally popular and almost a very common familiar name to even average Americans. And K-drama, K-cosmetics, you know, K-food, all of those things becoming obviously commonplace, you know, everyday encounters, even in, you know, boondocks of America. So, why and how it got there is my primary concern in the book. It uses two terms. Since you're running your audience base is more, you know, again, high theory. The term is a combination of a theory of hegemony that is driven by, you know, Antonio Gramsci, which says, every hegemony is, constructed through, you know, negotiation rather than coercion. And then mimicry is a concept that I've gotten from Homi K. Bhabha, which is a post-colonial theorist who argued that every time a colonized tries to repeat and model him or herself after the colonial powers, there's a mimicking going on, but that mimicking always creates a gap or a disjuncture, right, between the hegemonic, you know, colonizer and then, you know, the subjugated colonizer. I felt that over the last 75 years, Korea has undergone in many ways, I mean, yes, post-colonial experience, but one that is neo-colonial experience also with Americans, right? Being totally occupied, you know, militarily, economically, and culturally. And so this is one of the things that I thought was a, you know, theoretical rubric through which I can examine Korean popular culture and the success over the last, you know, 20, 30 years.
Brilliant. And, you know, I can't wait to read the book. Thank you, Kyung, so much for coming to High Theory and talking to us about Squid Game and your book.
And thank you for listening to High Theory.
If you like our podcast, please review and subscribe on Spotify, iTunes, Patreon, or wherever you get your podcast fix.
Sharonic Bosu manages our social media presence. Owen Quinn composes our theme music, and Kim Adams and Sharonic Bosu edit our audio.
You can also find us at hightheory.net.
We hope you have a highly theoretical day.